Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the DevRecruit podcast. Let me set the scene a little. Myself and gallery director Maybell are sitting with Adele van Heerden on a beautiful sunny terrace at Arts on Main in Maboneng, the heart of Johannesburg CBD. And we're here to chat about Adele's residency with us. You are concluding now your second week here, and you have another week and a half left.
Absolutely.
How are you? How has your time at the DevRecruit workshop been?
Well, it's been great. I think it's been quite an intense time for me, but I've learned so much. It's been really great to work with the other printmakers here. So we've tried some monotypes so far, and this week we got into some etching plates as well. So it's been super exciting and just great to be able to focus a bit on creating some new work.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with your work or your practice, how was it that you came to be in the arts?
Well, I think I always knew I wanted to be in the arts or in some kind of creative field. For a while, I was considering animation and fashion design. I grew up in quite a creative family, and I have a painter in my family and an animation artist. So that was always encouraged. And then I think at a certain stage later in high school, I realized I really just wanted to be in a studio full time. So then I went to study fine arts at the Ruth Prowse School of Art in Woodstock.
You mentioned that you had an interest in animation, your work having an illustrative quality. Where do you get your visual reference? What was your source of landing on this visual identity? Was it through a particular resonance with something you experienced in your life? Where does it stem from?
Well, I think that these things always happen sort of incrementally, and you can't always trace every little thing that influenced it. But I think, yeah, now that I mentioned the animation, perhaps that's definitely an influence. I think, yeah, I grew up watching a lot of anime. And I just spent a lot of time on the internet looking at imagery, research. I do a lot of visual research, go hiking a lot. I visit a lot of green spaces. I love being in sort of urban areas that incorporate a lot of greenery. But I think the thing that influenced me to make the work that I'm making right now is my residency at Cité des Arts in Paris, which happened about a year and a half ago now. So there I started experimenting a bit more with my drafting papers and my ink and gouache medium.
On one of the first days you were here, you visited the greenhouse project in Joubert Park in the CBD. It's very clear that you depict nature in urban spaces. With regards to the greenhouse, what is the relationship do you feel between nature, plants, and the urban in a greenhouse structure versus nature and plants occurring naturally outside of, you know, deliberate greenhouses?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting, particularly in Johannesburg, where it's such a sprawl and such a big urban space that I think people have had to work very hard here to keep the green spaces alive. You know, I was also researching the wilds quite a bit and how that came to be. I think it's quite empowering to have a greenhouse in the middle of Heelbrow, basically, where the community can go just drop in and cultivate their vegetables. A lot of traditional medicine plants are grown there. So I think that's also just a way of taking the power back and doing something for yourself. And I'm very much into that DIY culture and kind of making things, growing things. I think that's fascinating.
And so how has Johannesburg and the landscape here influenced what you're making with us at the workshop versus what you have made in Cape Town with that very familiar environment?
I think firstly, I'm always very inspired in new places, the sort of walking around a corner and not knowing what to expect and just seeing new spaces and new environments really just triggers a lot of creative energy for me. So it's been great, and also to have some extra time away from my usual responsibilities to be able to really focus on that has been, yeah, it's something quite precious and something to be really appreciated. So that's been super cool.
I think Joburg is probably, regarding your visual language, being one of the most forested cities in the world, must be quite an incredible source of inspiration. You say In part of your bio, there's a statement that goes, monuments disappear among a profusion of petals drawn on translucent paper. Soldiers and their horses become tiny toys. Do you think by, you know, depicting nature kind of encroaching on these monuments, you're almost saying there's this disappearance of history?
Well, I think that everything is cyclical, so no monument stays up forever. And I think it's like visually, obviously, it's a very striking image, sort of nature taking back. And also, I'm fascinated, like, how will these structures look in a hundred years if there are no humans? How will Johannesburg look if wilderness takes over again? So I think that's super fascinating. And I also enjoy that... that sort of dynamism between the organic and the sort of the colorful and the more organic shapes and visuals versus the sort of the hard urban and the monument kind of man-made structures. Yeah. I think it's an interesting relationship.
You're now working with a very mechanical technique in the printmaking workshop here in Joburg. How is working in printmaking influenced the images you've produced in your residency here?
Interesting question. I think the images I would have created, they're definitely different than the paintings for sure. I'm also sort of learning a lot more about monotypes and what the prints want to be like, because it's not the usual way of working for me. So it's been quite interesting to sort of mix it up a bit and feel my way around a bit more intuitively than I normally would. So the image is approaching, it's much more unexpected, I would say, than my usual way of working, which is the painting on the film.
Do you think you would continue with printmaking? You'd like to include it in your medium a lot more going forward?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm already crying about not having access to this workshop. So I've already spoken to one of the printmakers here about sending plates back and forth via PostNet so I can keep doing, especially the watercolor monotypes. I feel that there's still a lot for me to explore there, especially now that I've realized that I can actually go really big with it. I think it was a bit of a struggle at first to try and work small. And then when I realized I can actually do a full sheet of paper, sort of an A0 sized work, I'm really excited to push the boundaries of the monotypes now and to see what happens. And I'm also very excited to get back into the etching, because I did first and second year printmaking, but I didn't feel, it was sort of a shallow dive into everything. So we had exposure to many different kinds of printmaking, but I don't feel that we had enough time to really dive deep and to really push the limits of what it can achieve.
So from your time here, have you considered, or have you predicted rather, what your future work might look like, considering your experience in printmaking, or, you know, visually, subject matter wise, scale? Is there anything you foresee?
Well, I definitely want to try and be a bit more loose in my mark making with my painting. I think that the monotypes kind of force you to work a bit faster. The watercolor itself kind of wants to bleed and be a bit more free versus the ink and the gouache, which is much more graphic and sort of planned. And not, I wouldn't say it's rigid, but it's just a different quality. And yeah, I would definitely like to translate those qualities back into my painting practice.
You have experience, or you studied curatorship, right? How does that influence you as an artist?
So I think I learned a lot during that course, but I think the main thing that has helped me has been the fact that I'm able to sort of draw on many different themes and tie them back together somehow to really create a meaningful body of work. So before I studied that course, I think my work was a bit more tangential, going into many different sort of directions, but I wasn't sure how to bring it all together into one practice. And then studying that course really helped me to think a bit more meaningfully about the concepts and the practice to bring it all together in a meaningful family that all kind of works together. So it's not all separate things. It all kind of relates to each other, and there are all these different ongoing themes, but it all works together. Yeah.
And May, as the head curator at David Cook Projects, you have a perspective maybe in the reverse. So you do make art, you are an artist yourself, but you're based more heavily in curatorship. What do you have to say in response to Adele's experience as an artist in the curatorship world versus a curator in the art world?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying about how it's influenced your ability to put together your images in a certain way, I think is very interesting, because you're really a translator of what you're wanting to say to an audience. And I think having that sense in a course, you know, just curating pictures, but actually going into the images and doing that for an audience as well, I think is fascinating that you've done that in your process. But I'm also very interested in how the development of your imagery has changed throughout the making process in the workshop. Can you tell us a bit about that in terms of layering and how maybe you've expanded that practice, that particular trait of yours, into the process of printmaking?
Well, again, I think that, you know, the watercolor monotypes and the etching, they all kind of work together for sort of a unified body of work. And one thing that I learn in one process can then translate into the other.
So you spoke earlier about the layering process, how working on a stock piece of paper, just a white piece of paper, is very different than working in layers with regards to maybe starting on a wash. You know, what has that done for your imagery? Mm. And also, what is your feeling about your mark making after the prints? Do you think that that's going to feed into how you approach your works in gouache and film going forward?
So I definitely think there's an opportunity for things to become much more painterly. So I think when I got here at first, I was working pretty much straight onto the perspex with the watercolors and the inks. But I felt that it has to be perfect from the get-go, you know. And I had this idea beforehand of how it should look. And then obviously once it goes through the press, you realize it's emerging in a completely different way. So you kind of realize that you have to be a bit more intuitive about it and to kind of let the work emerge. And so I started doing just a single color wash on the whole plate and then building my image through there. So then I started doing sort of a muted blue wash, and then the greenhouse sort of emerged from that. And that was quite interesting. There was something a bit more sort of ghostly about it, or dreamlike. It wasn't quite so defined or rigid, I suppose. Yeah, and that is quite fascinating. And now I've realized they kind of want to be a bit more... They want to also emerge in many different layers and increments rather than all just in one sort of layer.
One thing that's fascinating, and I know this has fascinated David as well, the black lines, the graphic elements of your work. In a way, do you feel maybe now that it's a kind of safeguard for you to box, not box in your image, I don't want to use that language, but do you know what I'm saying? Like, it is more, you're more confident in creating those structures and filling them in as opposed to letting the colors become the image. And I know that working in color is very challenging because color tells a story of its own, where black and white images can tell you a story, just that it tells you the story of the image that is, and colors tell you the story of the image plus the colors that you've chosen to represent the work. The lines in your works as well, that already projects an image, it tells the viewer what it is. Do you think that's been a safeguard for you in how you've constructed images?
Yeah, perhaps. I think my modus operandi has been to sort of create an ink line drawing and then to fill in with color little bits, and then the image kind of, you know, the colors kind of come in like a, I wouldn't say it's a paint by numbers kind of thing, but it's definitely once the line work is there, you pretty much know where you're going. With the monotypes, I think it's been quite interesting having a bit of, more of an absence of those lines. There's something very interesting in the absence of that, a more sort of ghostly quality, or just a bit more nuance, I suppose. A bit more room for ambiguity.
Earlier you referenced a blue wash and a green wash on your first monotype. Can you elaborate a bit more on the actual technique of doing that and what you've learned from being here?
Well, I think that the starkness of just a white page and then working directly on that can be quite overwhelming for the artist and the viewer. For the artist, I think it can be very intimidating. Whereas if you've already put a wash on, then it's sort of already happening and the process has already started, and then it's easier to keep going. And I think it's interesting, once you add other colors on top of the wash, then it sort of layers and bleeds over each other and just creates more to discover there. Definitely want to explore that a bit more going forward.
Did you do a lot of planning before working on the Perspex plate?
Not particularly. I didn't really do any sketches. So my process always starts by taking pictures on the go, wherever that is. Here in Maboneng, I've made quite a few interesting responses to the urban environment here. And then, as I mentioned, Ubud Park's greenhouse and also the wilds. So the image is already emerging as I'm sort of exploring the environment and taking the pictures. And then once I'm getting back to the studio, I'm looking at them again and seeing which ones want to be paintings. But I like to just get started. I don't want to plan too much. Sometimes I do a bit of a Photoshop, sort of see what colors they want to be. We could perhaps push some saturation or some exposure here and there, and what colors, but they just need to emerge.
So some of the other works that you've made are not greenhouse imagery. They're more your largest plate that you were working on is an interior scene with a big dog in it. Can you tell us more about your approach to interiors and, yeah, our furry friends that are in your works? Like, what is your motivation behind including them in your work?
So I think during the first lockdown, I became very fascinated with everyone's sort of home environments and interiors and their pets. And so on social media, I was following everyone's really amazing pictures of their sourdough and their houseplants and their dogs having the best time, having all the attention, and the stories around that. And I think that there's so many interesting narratives to learn through other people's lives and the stories that they tell. So this one image that you're referring to is actually a friend of mine who's moved to the Karoo to a sheep farm, and he has actually four greyhounds, and they have a caravan that they take out to town when they're going shopping, and all four greyhounds hop in the caravan with them. And then when they're in town in Worcester, they stay at the camping grounds there and put out the carpets on the grass, and all the greyhounds have the best time in the sun there. So I find it very charming. I mean, these creatures mean so much to us, and I think the domestic scenes is an interesting paradox to the exterior scenes, to the outside world. I really enjoy that sort of tension or relationship as well.
Your works feel very personal. As you said, you saw people posting about their dogs and making sourdough, and so they feel like little visual descriptions of people's lives at a moment in time, which is so desirable and pleasing to people. I think your work is thus really relatable.
So I think that relationships are very important to me and community as well. So, you know, this has been quite a challenging time for everyone, especially when we can't see our friends or we can't see everyone as regularly as we would like to. But there are other ways of communicating. And I think with this work that I'm making, it's very much a way of communicating and to keep people in my life. Because I'm always thinking about you, even when I'm not seeing you. So that is another way of creating meaning and value. I think a lot of my work is very community driven. A lot of my inspiration comes from my friends. I think it's something very special that I'll keep carrying on with.
Let's backtrack a bit. How did you come to work at David Crook Projects? How did the relationship start?
I think I saw Ame doing a talk on Zoom about her involvement in the Kaakon car. She curated an exhibition, and I was just drawn to her as a person. I think we were having such interesting conversations on there, and I thought, well, let me just send my portfolio and just just begin a conversation, and if she likes it, then maybe she'll respond. And then she did respond, and we ended up having quite a few Zoom calls to get to know each other before I was eventually invited over. Yeah.
Stalking me. it's really fascinating how you approach your practice in the sense of who you want to work with. We value artists who want to work with us, and I think we have so much invested in artists who can draw and paint. So it was such a natural fit for us to actually invite you to come and work in the studio. And also just to mention the amazing work that Roxy and Kim and the other printers are doing to help you really expand and achieve, or translate rather, your practice in what you're doing in your studio in print as well, because I think that that's quite a special relationship. I mean, that's really the point of coming into the workshop, is to work in a way that you would otherwise not necessarily be able to work in your studio, so with the press. And the beauty of that is that we get to entice you to come back and work more with us, because it's been such a wonderful experience with you, and it's been so wonderful that you've been here for a long period of time, a residency that spanned over a few weeks, so that you could really find comfort in the materials that you're working with. So it was very easy for the team to invite you in, and there's lots more to come in terms of where these images will be going and how we will be showing them going forward. But it also coincides with your exhibition at Lismore. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that and how that's kind of crossed over with your being at the workshop?
Yes, absolutely. So I think before we'd actually confirmed anything, I was planning to hire a studio in August House to spend some time doing some last touches on the paintings that I'd prepared for Eliza Moore. But then it ended up working out that I could use your studio. So I think that has actually been really valuable, that I could continue working on my paintings in between the printmaking, because that also gave Roxy and Kim an opportunity to see the way I work and to really familiarize themselves with my process, and so that they could make more informed suggestions in terms of the way that we approach things.
May I want to ask you a question? You often emphasize the significance of being able to draw, specifically for the artists we work with. Why is it so important with Adele's work? How do you feel her ability to draw, and perhaps that comes from her art training at Ruth Prowse School of Art? How has that benefited the work in the workshop?
Yeah, I think, I mean, David would always say this. I mean, our interests in artists are really their ability to draw, which translates so well in printmaking. I mean, for me, Adele's work, that's so graphic. We could already see the potential of it being translated in monotype. There is some exploration with etched work, which I think is very exciting as well. But the really interesting thing happens when you take your ability to construct images into monotype, because you're working blind in printmaking half the time. Even now, when you're working in monotype, you're working on a perspex sheet, and you have to be intuitive about what the line is doing. You already have to know how to see, and that's the value of drawing. Life drawing that you go through, which is horrendous, that really teaches you how to see something for what it is. It gives you the ability to draw something the way it is, not the way that you think it is. Mm-hmm. And I think in printmaking, because you're working often blind, in whether it be on copper plates or whether it be on perspex sheets, you already have to know, in a way, what you're dealing with for it to be translated in the way that you want. And then there's that spontaneous quality of printmaking as well that just adds to that. So I know many artists that we've worked with who can obviously draw, they think that they maybe not so great at it, because I think it's a practice that not many artists practice in Adele. Maybe you can tell us maybe how much time you spend drawing and exercising that. But so many artists go back to drawing intensively after they've been in the studio, which I find is such a nice exchange in coming back to the fundamentals of making images.
Yes, I think being at Ruth Prowse School of Art really gave me a really good head start in the drawing department, because it was just many hours every week of developing that discipline and training your eye. And as you said, learning the proper foundations of drawing, seeing things, how is this image going to translate, which part of it should be in focus and which what should recede into the background. And those are all things that you have to consider when you're preparing your plate. So yeah, that's definitely super important. So, and I'll often go to coffee shops with my notebook and just sort of draw people around, or draw a chair if I'm at the airport killing some time. It's always nice to do some gestural drawings just to kind of train that part of your eye, because it is also something that can get lost throughout the years. I think you can also forget, so you have to keep practicing. And I'm almost feeling like I have to sign up for some evening classes when I go back to Cape Town, because I think it is something that you have to refresh every now and then. Absolutely.
Could you give our listeners a bit of an insight as to how the workshop team pushes you, maybe lesser in monotypes? You can comment on that in monotypes, but in the creation of plates, because I know that we have an experimental workshop. You don't just come in and here's your plates and this is what you do. Can you elaborate a bit on how they guide and how, from a technical perspective, they help you to achieve what you want to achieve with plate making?
Yeah, so I think they are very good at picking up when there's a bit of a lull, or if there's some uncertainty, they're very good at checking in and coming to see how they could answer any questions that you might have. They're very good at suggesting things, because I think it's been a while since I've done traditional printmaking. So I sort of have my image and I know what I want, where I want to go, but also I don't know what all the possibilities are. And it's great when Roxy walks into the studio and says, hey, do you want to try this? I think we should try this. And I think that's just, I'm a yes girl. I want to say yes, let's do all the things, try all the different combinations, all the things that I didn't think was possible. From a technical perspective, I think it's super valuable to have just that person that you can just check in with.
I think that's a good place to conclude. Is there anything you'd like to end off on?
I just want to end off by saying thank you so much for the opportunity to come and spend some time here. It's been super valuable, and I'm definitely going to take this experience back with me and think about it a bit more, and hopefully develop some more ideas to continue sort of pushing the boundaries of the printmaking.
Thank you, Adele. Thank you, Amay. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to yet another episode of the Devricrit podcast. We look forward to sharing the works Adele has created during her residency at the Devricrit workshop. You can expect to see her works included in our monotype show at the beginning of next year, 2022. Do stay tuned. Thank you.